What's good, everybody? This is Langston Clark, founder and organizer of Entrepreneurial Appetite, a series of events dedicated to building community, promoting intellectualism, and supporting Black businesses. In this episode of Entrepreneurial Appetite's Black Book Discussions, we feature a conversation between Isaiah Jackson, author of Bitcoin in Black America, and Demetric Byrd, founder of the Blockchain Coaching Group. Before we get into this episode, I want to give a special shout out to Jamaica Dawes, founder of Slim Pickens Outfitters, the first Black-owned gear shop in the nation. Slim Pickens is offering our listeners a 10% discount code, EA Book Club, all caps and no spaces, when you make purchases at slimpickensoutfitters.com. That's EA Book Club, all caps with no spaces, at slimpickensoutfitters.com.
This is Jamaica Dawes with Slim Pickens Outfitters, the first Black-owned gear shop in the nation. We exist to diversify the outdoors through the outdoor industry. We're excited to partner with Entrepreneurial Appetite. And as always, act justly, love kindly, serve humbly, and adventure out.
Demetric, go ahead and tell us about what you do. And then Isaiah, go ahead and tell us about what you do, and then we'll start the conversation.
Sure. For us, God has graced us, me and my wife, to create what we call the ecosystem of impact. And that pretty much just deals with three key areas in society, which 300 Seconds is our community arm, in which we strive to reach the community, 5 minutes at a time, just building relationships and ameliorating the negative effects of social conditions. And then we have The Journey, which is a life group here in San Antonio, where we strive to mentor. It's like a grassroots mentorship program where we study the text from a Christian basics and foundation. And we also share financial principles, growth principles there. And we also have Team Byrd, which is here, Inc., which creating value club that we mentor and coach families to succeed and to become more than. And in that, we started the Blockchain Coaching Group, because we realized that, hey, it's two worlds out there. And you could choose to operate in the old one or the new one that the whole world is coming to, which is blockchain technology. So that's a little bit about me.
Oh, yeah. And I'm Isaiah Jackson, the author of Bitcoin in Black America, versions 1 and 2. Also the host of The Daily Show, The Gentleman of Crypto, longest running daily show in crypto history. Also have a weekly show called Community Crypto, number one rated show on CoinDesk TV. And the co-founder of Black Bitcoin Billionaires, the largest Bitcoin group on Clubhouse in the world. So do a lot of things in the space and been around since 2013. And definitely glad to have this conversation, because I want everybody to get good information and to learn about this technology that is coming, whether you want it to or not. And I'm just glad to have this conversation tonight.
Okay, I think Isaiah, thank you, man, for being on and taking the time to be present. I think one of the main things that you just mentioned that a lot of people really don't grasp is the word technology. A lot of people, when they first hear about Bitcoin, the first thing that they say, man, that's that digital money, right? When I first heard of it, in fact, many years ago, a friend of mine named Spencer Dawkins called me, and I was driving, like, hey, what you think about digital money? And my mind, I had a closed mindset, and I instantly said, man, nobody don't want to be part of that Ponzi scheme. Digital money, it doesn't even make sense. Like, God forgive me for that closed mindset. And I see people respond that way today, but that was important. The word technology, how important is that word to you when it relates to Bitcoin and viewing it as a technology before we even begin to talk about the book?
Oh, yeah. So when it comes to technology, if you think about the internet in the 90s, there were people who actually said, why would I need the internet? I don't need to talk to anybody in China. So in retrospect, people are like, what? You know, now internet is everything, even down to some of the stacks of Wi-Fi and things that we all need, Bluetooth. And, you know, technology is all important, because if we get too deep on price, a lot of people are turned away or they don't understand it because they're not technically investors. But if you focus on the technology, Bitcoin actually solved a long time problem. It's called the general Byzantine problem. It's the ability to have a trustless system, which literally they have to take that out of the textbooks now, because it's not a problem anymore in computer science. And I am a computer science major. I went to NC State. So the tech is all important. And we're getting into the book. And if you read the book, you'll see where I started off thinking about price and how much money I can make. But when you realize the tech that's behind it, the ability to move money through space and time. We can transact with aliens, technically. The tech is amazing, and that's all people should be focused on. The price comes later, the value is there. So we'll definitely get into that.
Look, yeah, and I remember that section where you mentioned that in the book to where, listen, and we're going to have a general statement of where, how the book came to life. But now that we're on this subject of technology, I think it was around on page 7, you said that in 2014, right, you it was an important year in cryptocurrency, and you learned that the price meant nothing. Pretty much what you just said verbatim, that you looked at Bitcoin through the lens of desperation rather than emancipation. Like, could you kind of highlight that and how important it is for people to really consider, like, Bitcoin, being that that's our topic, in that light? Or how did you gain that lens?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So when you think about technology, one phrase I always like to use is software eats everything. So any issues that you have, at some point, there's tech that catches up to solve that problem. And I mean, even thinking about the Black community, it was hard for people to catch a taxi in New York for a while. And then Uber came along. Software solved that problem. Then now that's gone away. Same thing with some of the other issues that we've had, being able to use tech to solve that issue. And Bitcoin gives you an amount of freedom, the ability to hold your own wealth. The first time in history, I believe, where you can hold your own wealth and it can't be taken away from you. Definitely in American history. And I don't think people understand how valuable that is because of the technology of being able to hold your private keys, being unconfiscatable. That is the essence of what money should be. And because of that technology, you have the freedom now to transact with whoever you want, whenever you want, and nobody can take it away from you. Because a lot of people talk about a lot of things, a lot of investments, but they can all be taken away from you from a third party. Only Bitcoin is the only one where at no point can they take your private key unless it gives it away. So yes, that is why I said I looked at it through the lens of desperation, because I didn't have much money. I was a teacher, second lowest paying state. But when you really understand what Bitcoin can do, the emancipation that comes from it opens up your mind, your thoughts. You go down a rabbit hole, you learn about economics, cryptography, history. I mean, I know some people didn't even understand money before Bitcoin came out, and then they understood, you know, what happens from there. So that's what I mean by freedom and the ability to free yourself in your mind as well as your money.
Wow, that's awesome. And just to piggyback on what Izell is saying, in my research, I realized that Bitcoin, and not just Bitcoin, just blockchain technology as a whole, was one of the greatest technical advances for humankind in the past, like, 2 or 3 decades. Like, if you think about the technology creation, like, I tell ones that, listen, if you think about the Jetsons or smart cities, there's no smart city without blockchain technology. It does not happen. If you think about self-driving cars or anything, the way you imagine the future of life does not happen without blockchain technology. That's just, it's a transition to that future. So that's awesome. So, man, that's an awesome statement that you mentioned, pay attention to the technology. Now, get into the book. Right. Getting to the genesis of the book. And so on page 2, I believe it was, you mentioned that you and your friends were sitting in the living room of your apartment, and how y'all were in despair. And someone opened up a conversation about money. Right. And someone made a statement. Really, it's the genesis, kind of what started this movement. That what I picked up from the book was that, hey, I need to make more money. I think it was Brad or someone that said, hey, I need to make money. Y'all started going through a list of things about money. And then a friend, parents were in Bitcoin, and he threw the word Bitcoin out there. And take us from that place to where now the book was birthed. Give us the genesis, but also kind of pull us from, put us in that scene. Help the people.
Oh, man. You're taking me back, brother. Well, October 2013, I had just started teaching. I was teaching high school. I started in August, and by October, after the first 2 paychecks, and I was like, I can't even barely live off of that. I have just enough money to be broke, like I said in the book. And, you know, we're sitting on the couch, hanging out and drinking beers, talking to each other. We're all fresh out of college. I was 23. And, you know, your first job isn't really that good. Their jobs, you know, entry level stuff. So, of course, it started all with, you know, how can we make more money? And we know we kicked around ideas. None of it really made sense because, you know, we did have sort of a mindset that we wanted to make money now. And that's kind of how stocks and real estate kind of got thrown out. We was like, well, maybe in the future, but I don't have money for that. And my friend literally said, we discussed something at my job today called Bitcoin. and I don't know what the hell that is. He's like, it's too techy for me. I don't understand it. And he worked for Charles Schwab. So this is what I mean when I say, you know, a lot of the banks already knew about it. They just didn't act on it. He said, I didn't understand it. I have a tech background. So he kind of passed it off to me and was like, yeah, my parents are thinking about buying some, you know, just in case, because the future is probably going to be digital. And his parents were millionaires already. So I was like, well, if you don't have money, you should copy the people that have money. And I was like, well, I'll at least look into it. And when I read the white paper that night, it blew my mind, because being in computer science, they solved the general Byzantine problem. Being in college during the recession, I was beyond broke when that happened in 2009. I was in college, could barely afford a 4 for $4 from Wendy's. And then the recession came and I'm scraping together pennies to try and get chips. But yes, it blew my mind, because I was like, man, somebody figured it out. I don't know who Satoshi is. I don't know if it's him, her, they. It doesn't matter. Just like we don't know who technically created the internet, we know that it works. It's open source technology. And I was like, somebody figured it out. And in the second book, I say this, it's almost like when you fall in love, you want to tell the whole world. You can't wait. It's like, you gotta hear about this. So that's how I was when I first heard about it. And I understood the implications of the future, because the only way you can win in the future is to prepare for it now. And when looking at where we were going, I understood that digital money would be a part of our economy, as we can see now, and that Bitcoin was sort of the black swan event that people talk about that shifted everything. Mm-hmm. And not only did Bitcoin do that, blockchain technology, and then later other cryptocurrencies, but reading that white paper, seeing that there was an ability to have a trustless system to transact without any third party, definitely opened up my eyes. So if you think about that scene, just think about, anytime you've been sitting around talking about money, most of the times you don't come up with any good ideas, but just one time, it was like lightning in a bottle, and just took it from there. I've pretty much been studying Bitcoin every day since that point. The last 8 years, I've pretty much dedicated my life to it, even with having a few jobs in between, went full Bitcoin in 2017. So that was the genesis of it. And that's why we're here today.
And so what kind of led to, like, I want to write this book called Bitcoin in Black America?
Oh, yeah. So Bitcoin is the hardest part of finance and the hardest part of tech put together. So as a Black person who has dabbled in both, in the financial world, they don't really mess with you because they think you don't know what you're talking about. And in the tech world, same thing. They discriminate because, oh, you're Black. You might have a couple good ideas, but you can't be as good as us, right? So my entry into Bitcoin was, you know, I would talk to people, mostly white males who were in the space at the time, and they didn't really take me seriously because, you know, that's just how it was. And in my opinion, me putting out the message about Bitcoin to people that I knew going, you know, putting that message out to Black people was, you know, it was because of proximity. But then I thought about it and I was like, this is a match made in heaven. We should be on top of this. And I've said before on other interviews that from a stereotypical standpoint, we have people that say, oh, my lawyer is always going to be Jewish, or my accountant's always going to be Asian. And I wanted our stereotype to be Bitcoin and blockchain technology. Black people are taking over this industry. And that is what I wanted. And that was the beginning of it. And I actually talked to Brad, the same Brad from the beginning. I remember going to his house 2017 and telling him about this idea. And he was like, dude, you should have wrote this book yesterday. He was like, it is perfect. He was like, why would Black people mess with the banks? And he's white. So he was like, I don't even know why Black people even, you know, acknowledge banks as a solution, because they've obviously done things to take it away. So we need a money system that I think gives us leverage. And I wrote the book with the intention of giving it to Black people. It's for everybody, but oftentimes everybody tries to appease everybody. So you end up helping nobody. And I wanted to target it towards the Black community, that they realize this message is for you, but it can be applied for other communities as well. And I'm glad that the reception was good behind it, because I got a lot of pushback early on before I wrote the book. Book came out, price started going up, and a lot of people started reshaping their thoughts. So that was the process behind the book. And most people that write books, they have more of I write 5 pages a day, 10 pages a day. That wasn't me. I kind of had so much in my brain. I had 6 writing sessions total to write the whole book. Wow. And I wrote about 280 pages at first. But I cut it down because I realized nobody understands what I'm talking about. So I had to make it simpler. That process actually took longer than the book, because it was just like, I was just spilling out on pages. So that's how the book came about. And it came out July 2019. And here we are almost 2 years later. And it's definitely resonated.
Wow. No, it has. I read the book.
I've been in cryptocurrency or blockchain technology since 2016, I want to say, 2016 or 2017. And even for me, having some knowledge concerning this space, I thought the book was written well, that it was down to earth, even the spacing, right? It made it an easy read. And I don't know if that was intentional, but that was like a genius, you know, just to put it like that, because sometimes a book, especially for the African-American, not just for the African-American, intimidate people, right? When they see a book with small print and many words, it's like, oh man, don't say, I can't read this. It's just too much weight on my shoulders, you know? And so the book was very digestible, you know, and it was easy to try, easy to follow. And so I think you did an awesome job. For those that haven't gotten the book yet, this is the book right here, Bitcoin and in Black America. He has a part two, which we would get in a little bit later on, with seven new chapters later on in this interview. But part one would get you a good way. So part two probably would take you to the another mile marker. But
can I comment on that real quick? When you said the spacing, there were people that thought that the spacing was because I didn't write a lot. And like I just told you, I wrote almost 300 pages. Mm-hmm. I did the spacing because I actually gave the first version of the book to my grandmother. And she was like, I can't really see it. And I was like, well, if I want everybody to read it, I need older people to read it as well. The second thing was, I gave it to a cousin that was 16 years old. And he immediately was like, dang, this is way too many pages. Then he opened it and he was like, oh, it's not that many. It's pretty spaced out. And I remember the interview Jay-Z said, he said, I could rap like Talib Kweli, but you should make your content at an eighth grade level because that's most people's reading level. Mm-hmm. And I took those things, applied it to the book. And most people don't realize it, but the ability to read something fast gives you the information quicker, because a lot of people start books, but they don't finish it. Like one of my favorite books is Basic Economics from Thomas Sowell, but it's like 500 pages. And most people is like, I'm not reading that. So the ability as a teacher to take hard concepts and make it easy, that's why the book was presented the way it is. And the second book will be similar.
Hey, it works. It works, right? It's really easy. In fact, audience, I read the book in like a day and a half at the most.
Exactly.
Picking it up here and there and going through it. So awesome book whenever you get a chance to go through it. So listen, one of the things that you just mentioned before in the genesis of creating Bitcoin in Black America, you talked about how your friend Brad was like, hey, I don't know why people will, Black people will use banks anyway. So in the book, you said that if the ancestors of the past had Bitcoin, like this is what they would be using, right? Mm-hmm. Can you somewhat highlight for the audience your mindset behind like why they would be using it, like your stance on that, but also like some of the things that banks have done that your friend Brad would say, like being Caucasian, man, Black people shouldn't be, like what are the offenses, but also and also explain why you believe like Harriet Tubman and many others would have been using it to do what they did.
Oh yeah, so a lot of our revolutionaries, especially in the 60s, were broke. People don't realize people like Harry Belafonte, other people with money, had to fund their actual their tours or their books or whatever they had going on. Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, people from the Black Panther movement, they did not have money. And the thing is, if they did try to raise money, a lot of times it came from someone who wanted control. And that's how we got a lot of the Black groups that are out now. You know, there was money given from other communities, but they would have used Bitcoin, in my opinion, because they would have realized, if I want to raise money or if I want to earn it long term in order to fund what I'm doing, I cannot use this current system, because even if you raised $1 million, it has to go into a bank, which then is in a part of the current federal banking system, which gets devalued by inflation and all of that, which I'll go into in a second. So the reason I said that is it doesn't matter what type of economic or what type of social change you want. It has to be economic at the foundation. And I think they would have realized that. And honestly, when Martin Luther King started saying we need to have an economic solution, he got killed 2 weeks later. And most people don't realize, you know, that is the thing that most people, that's what changes things mostly. And some of the reasons why I was so adamant about writing about Buck the Fanks, which is the name of the chapter, is because some of the things they've done have been so egregious, we owe them nothing. For one, redlining. Most people don't understand redlining. They literally drew red lines around certain areas Black people couldn't live, effectively making your property value stuck or go down. And they did things such as build highways smack dab through Black neighborhoods. That's why when you drive down 85 in the South or highways in general, when you get off the exit, it's usually a Black neighborhood first. Or as they some people say, it's the hood. They did that deliberately. They built it straight through so you have no chance. Or steel mills. I know in the Midwest, in Detroit, in Ohio, they have steel mills where the smoke would blow a certain direction. Black people on the side where the smoke was blowing because property value goes down. These were deliberate things done by banks. And then loans. Getting loans for business, getting loans for, or personal loans, or getting educational loans before we had, you know, the big government. Most banks would look at you and say, what zip code are you in? Oh, you're Black and you're in the zip code. No chance. And most people think I was talking about long time ago. In the book, I made it a point to start at the year 2012 up to now. So this is current. They're literally paying because they don't care. They can print money at will, take it, pay off these lawsuits. And they're doing it today. In fact, in the second book, I just used 2020. That's it. So you can see how greedy these banks are under your nose. You don't realize it. They don't care about you. We have payday loans in a lot of Black neighborhoods. We have overdraft fees. I think JP Morgan made more in overdraft fees than Coinbase did the entire year. Like that's, you're taxing poor people for being poor. And not saying all Black people are like this, but from coming from where we're from, if they tried to hold you back to gain wealth, there's no reason to cooperate with these people. There's no reason to use their services. And if you work for a bank, like I said in the book, I'm sorry I have to flame your profession, but you're helping your own oppression. And at the end of the day, you have to make a decision. If you are good at what you do, look at the people who are at Goldman Sachs, who are at JP Morgan, who left. They all work in the crypto industry now. The new chief policy officer for Coinbase is from Goldman Sachs. The new CEO of Binance.us is Brian Brooks, who used to be the officer of the Comptroller of Currency. So even if you do work in banks, you need to figure out a Bitcoin or blockchain solution and leave, especially if you're Black. They don't have your best interests at heart. And there's plenty of examples in the book for you to view for yourself.
That's good. That was that was a lot of information. So I want to kind of like help that information to be digested, right? For those who may be the first time hearing it. Was that he mentioned that banks could just print money. And we're talking, when he mentions that, he's talking about fractional reserve lending, right? Which came into play once Nixon took us away from gold from the dollar, disconnected it. Back in the 70s, the banks were able to now print at will to print more money than what they actually have on hand. And that's called fractional reserve lending. And this is what kind of created the boom with many other things that he mentions in the book in 2008, the crisis that literally shook America. Well, did shake America in many ways. So yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah. And I was going to say, there's a difference between commercial banks and Federal Reserve banks. So commercial banks were more of the in your face racism that we speak of. Federal Reserve actually affects everybody, but people often say when America has a cold, Black people have the flu. So if it's bad for all of us, it's really bad for us. And the Federal Reserve, literally, every time they print money, they're stealing from you without a gun. They just passed a bill to try and print $6 trillion more. And people don't understand that inflation, hyperinflation, is because you print too much money. If you need an example, look at Zimbabwe. If you need another example, look at Nigeria. If you need another one, look at Venezuela. And if you think we're immune to it, let me give you this statistic. Every single fiat currency that's ever been created has failed. Every single one, 100%. So if you think we're immune to our currency failing, our dollar is down 99% since the Federal Reserve was created in 1913. How much lower can we go?
Well, you can't, you know, audience. I remember reading a book called The Age of Empires. How long do empires last? You know, Rome never thought, obviously, that how great they were, that they would be just dust and ashes, right? Rome is just a memory now, you know. And so, but when you look at study the length of reserve currencies, how long they last, like, and even the transition of the economy to a new economic system, it seems that it lasts every 30 to 50 years, we go to a new monetary system. And there's no coincidence that Bitcoin, like you mentioned, was floated out there as a white paper in a mysterious way, same way the internet was created in a way. And now that every government is prepping to go to a digital central bank currency. Can you talk a little bit about that, that you mentioned in your book, that the United States, we know China, we know Russia is working, we know Africa connected with a blockchain company called Cardano. We know that Cambodia already has turned all over to a digital currency called Sora. Mitsu and their technology. And can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. So, and I also want to add in Bahamas. They have the sand dollar, first ever. I think a lot of people don't realize that the ability to own your own wealth is not just for individuals. It's also for nation states. And currently, I'm right here in Barbados. They're separating from the United Kingdom after this year. As far as economically, they're going to be by themselves. So one solution that I'm working on down here and other places as well is that if you have Bitcoin on the balance sheet, much like a lot of these large companies, that's the next step. Nation states are going to use Bitcoin as backing for their system in order to ensure that the money system is fair, and or at the very least that they have a money system that's transparent, because a lot of the printing of money, moving to Cayman Islands, the Federal Reserve losing $1 trillion. How does that happen? All of this stuff is a result of humans making choices with your money. And when you change it to math and verifiable software, I think that's what the change will be. And there's even more countries that have a plan with CBDCs, which I believe, you know, CBDCs was in the plan all along. More surveillance, the ability to use cash money going away, all of that was the plan. But again, like I said before, Bitcoin and cryptocurrency was like the black swan event. They didn't see it coming. They didn't have a plan to stop it. And they have tried before, but if they could, they would have. They can't at this point. It's too late. All they can do is adapt and get on ramp. So I think we're definitely seeing the change into the digital future. And again, with blockchain technology, there is no other way for us to achieve the future that we're speaking of. So I think these countries realize that and are on board.
Okay, that's awesome. You mentioned in the book also that, because I want to talk, we talked about the history, we talked about the problem that's currently going on in the world, in the transition of the world's economy to a digital age. And we talked about this technology, which is very groundbreaking. If people take the time to look into it, they'll realize that, wow, this is it. Right. Pretty much. This is it. It's not going anywhere. You can't erase it. To erase it, you have to turn off the whole Internet. Right. So with that stated, you mentioned in the book that you don't need to know how to change your transmission. Right. You don't need to know how to fix head gaskets in order to drive. You just get in the car and drive. And so this was dealing with people getting involved. So how can the audience, using all these big words, like we want to try to make it simple when you hear trustless and this and blockchain and that's how can you make it like the audience getting in the car and starting to drive this get involved with Bitcoin, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. So it's always three simple steps: buy it, store it, earn it. Very simple. So as you're sitting here, if you have Cash App, for example, you can buy $1 worth of Bitcoin on Cash App right now as this is going on. So get some skin in the game and buy Bitcoin. At least you'll see how it transacts, how you can send it to your own wallet. There are other wallets where you can do that, but buy some, get some skin in the game. All right. Second thing is to store it, because there's no point in having Bitcoin and trying to store your wealth if you can't own it. And one thing I always say is no keys, no cheese. So you need to own your private keys. And by storing it, you would want to get something like a Trezor or a Ledger, which is just a small USB stick where you can store your wealth, much like a safe for your money or for anything else. You store your Bitcoin on there. That's called cold storage, which all that means is it's offline. Nobody can steal it. It's safe, and you want to be able to store it. And then last thing, you want to be able to earn Bitcoin. If you have a business, you can accept Bitcoin right now for payment. If you have a Shopify website, they have it built in already. If you have any website, you can use BTC Pay Server and implement it. But also you can earn it through services like Lolli. There's a service called Lolli, L-O-L-L-I. You get cashback rewards in the form of Bitcoin. So for example, I buy way too much Postmates, way too much. But every time I do, I get 3% cashback in Bitcoin. So the $500 worth of Postmates I spent last year is worth about $2,700 now. And that's one way you can earn it. Another way is Fold, the Fold app. They have a Visa card. Every time you buy anything, I've seen people buy cars, pay taxes, buy a house, buy a boat. I've seen all types of ways to spend with Visa. You get cash back rewards in the form of Bitcoin. And if you hold it long term, it'll probably pay for the item that you spent, that you bought. Sorry, because I've seen that before. So you want to buy it, store it, and earn it. Those are the first three things to do. And that gets you started without having to have all of the technical knowledge and all of the other stuff. Because again, most of us cannot explain layer two Wi-Fi, TCP, IP technology. But you know, when you click on your Wi-Fi, you type in your password, it works, right? That's all you need to know about Bitcoin. You buy it, you store it, you earn it.
So that's good. In other words, don't make it too complicated. Just get involved and use it and learn it as you go, like a car. Most people don't know how to fix parts on a car. They just know they want to drive. So what he's saying is get in and get involved and drive, right? Exactly. Just drive. So that's awesome. Yeah. So we got a little bit more time, right, Langston? To keep
going? We actually have a lot of time. Let me ask a question. If it's okay, I know you're in your flow right now.
Go ahead.
No, but I want to ask a question. Maybe I'll try to do two questions in one. Okay. So Isaiah, you're a former teacher, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so, what are your suggestions for? We hear a lot about like African American studies being taught in schools, like K-12. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's all this stuff going on about critical race theory in schools. Most people really don't even know what it is and whatnot. From your perspective as a former teacher, how do we start the momentum, right, for our children to be learning about Bitcoin in Black America or cryptocurrency in Black America? I know that's one of the things that you had mentioned earlier. So I was wondering if you could tell us just a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. So if you're a parent and you have kids, you should be teaching them about Bitcoin, because a lot of us, including myself, did not learn about finances early, did not learn about tech early. And now you have the perfect fusion of both and something that is here to stay. Kids should know about it, because any kid under the age of 12 has never lived in a world without Bitcoin. So it's imperative that we teach our kids about Bitcoin, about smart contracts, about blockchain technology, about building the future that we want, because in the internet age, we missed it. We didn't build the web. We didn't build the Googles. We didn't build the Facebooks. But if we had 7 and 8 year olds learning about tech in 95 and 96, we would have. That's what I see here. So make sure you teach your kids. And one thing I'm doing to make sure I'm helping with the solution, because I'm a solution oriented person, having a summer camp in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm having a Bitcoin summer camp. We'll have 25 kids in person, 25 online, teaching them about how Bitcoin works, blockchain technology, building smart contracts, making their own NFTs so they can auction them off, all of those things. And one of the biggest parts of this industry that I've always told people is that you can't really teach an old dog new tricks. There's a lot of older people who just will not accept it. I've talked to thousands of people and they just won't accept it. But if they have a kid or a nephew that is in the industry and then all of a sudden they have more money than them, or they can pay for their own college, or they can establish themselves in industry, like blockchain engineers make 30% more than any other industry. If they do that, that usually convinces them, like, this must be real, because I've seen it. I helped a 15-year-old kid get into Bitcoin in 2016. And he paid his own way to college. His mom thanked me profusely and then asked me, can you teach me as well? So I'm telling people that as far as kids go, that is the future. That's where my attention is going. Really, like 90% of it is going towards kids. And I want them to understand that in the future, especially Black kids, we can run this industry if we want to. We're only 12 years in. So we have the opportunity to do it now. And I believe it's imperative. We have to have a sense of urgency. I won't tell you what you do with your kids, but liberal arts, psychology, whatever they are, if it's not Bitcoin and blockchain technology, they're not preparing for the future. They're preparing for now. And because of technology, most of the things you learn while you're in school are going to be outdated by the time you graduate. The only thing that that sustains is technology. So that's why we should have that focus.
So my follow-up question to that is this. Mm-hmm. I view you as like, you're an Afrofuturist of finance. You know what I mean? Like you're thinking about where we're going to be.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Where we were 12 years ago, but like where we could be like 50 years from now, right? And that point about like, we missed the boat on like, getting our kids maybe computers or early internet access in the 90s. So we didn't get to make the Googles and the Facebooks and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering now, I'm in the process of shifting this book club, these book discussions into a business, right? Mm-hmm. And reading the book has motivated me to think about, well, how do I get to a place where I'm doing monetary exchanges in Bitcoin where I guess what I'm trying to say is like, how do I build a community of people that I'm exchanging the currency with? Like, what would be your first step if you have a small Black community where you are? Like, how do you get those people together to just start doing the exchange between ourselves? How would you begin that?
Oh, yeah. So I would say to download the Black Wall Street app. A good friend of mine, Hill Harper, and Naja Roberts. You may know Hill Harper, actor, author. He wrote letters to young Black men, I believe. And they have the Digital Black Wall Street app coming out, which is coming out June 1st. And that is literally the solution we've been talking about, the ability to have a community of people that not only use Bitcoin for maybe peer-to-peer loans or storing or dollar cost averaging, but they're going to be businesses listed on the app so that you can transact with them in Bitcoin, because that's how you start a circular economy. Now, I know some people have reservations about spending it, about spending cryptocurrency because they want to save it for the future. That's fine. Stack all you want. The thing is, when we discuss the medium of exchange portion of Bitcoin in America, we're kind of spoiled, right? We have a relatively stable currency. But when you start talking to, I have friends in Nigeria that are like, the Naira used to be the same as a dollar. Now it's 510 Naira to $1. You think volatility in Bitcoin scares me? No, this is better than anything we've ever had. So we have to start thinking along the lines that transacting across borders and transacting with each other is imperative to start this circular economy, because the dollar stays in our community, what, 6 hours? And during the actual Black Wall Street in the 20s in Tulsa, it was actually more like 2 weeks. So we have to get back to that point. And I think it's very possible with something like the Digital Black Wall Street app, or the ability to have meetups. So in your city, having Bitcoin meetups, meeting with people to see who has Bitcoin, who you can buy it from, who you can transact with, and also giving discounts to people for paying with Bitcoin. Because then what does that do? That gives people more purchasing power just for using Bitcoin. I've seen that everywhere. People giving 20, 30, and I think it's only going to increase as Bitcoin becomes more valuable. People are going to get desperate. I think even governments, they're going to get desperate. Like, we don't have it enough. We'll give you a 90% discount. Just give us Bitcoin. So I think if we start now, we'll have the infrastructure in place to accept payments, to also understand how to do accounting. And also, as far as medium of exchange with other people, the trust that you have between humans meeting with each other, we'll establish that now. We got to start now. We got to have a sense of urgency. So that's how.
My favorite point in the book, like the part, because before everyone got on, I was like, blew my mind. I hate it when people say Black people have spending power, right? And we're like, and in my mind, I'm like, that's dumb, right? we try to leverage the amount of money that we spend in mainstream institutions as if we are the ones with power, but we're the spenders, we're not the producers. And so I think people, it's just kind of like a sly way of saying that we are in the economic hierarchy, we're still beneath. We can't make demands as the people who are spending. And so I like the reframe that you have. You frame spending power as, because we don't have access to capital, banks have done us wrong in the past, our wealth and our families isn't what it should be as compared to other groups, even other so-called minority groups, that spending power for us has to be framed around getting more for less. And so I'm wondering, could you talk a little bit more about how you view spending power and how the cryptocurrencies, the blockchain technologies allows us to get more for less?
Absolutely. So like I just said before, as the value of Bitcoin increases, the medium of exchange portion of money, which is three parts, store value, medium of exchange, and then unit of account. We've already established it as a store of value. Bitcoin has established that. But the medium of exchange era that's starting, that era happens when people understand that this is a better money system. So then people will transact. But the thing is, they will say, I'm not giving you my Bitcoin, or I'm not giving my cryptocurrency without a discount. And what businesses will be able to do is give these discounts to people so that that increases their spending power. And what I mean by that is, I have a story in 2016. I bought a $1,500 burrito because it was $15 at the time. And since that time, the Bitcoin that I spent has 100x. And all that means is that now the amount of, if I had that same amount of Bitcoin now, I could have bought 100 burritos 5 years later. That increases your spending power. That's what that means. That means that if one Bitcoin equals $1 million and you have one Bitcoin today could buy you what, a car, small house? One Bitcoin in 5 years could buy you a mansion, or it could establish you as one of the top 1%. And that's what I mean by increasing your spending power. Bitcoin increases your spending power every year it is in existence. The network effect of Bitcoin, or if we get into Moore's law, technology doubles every 2 years. So what that means is that as the tech gets better and as you hold Bitcoin, your spending power will increase because the value of Bitcoin will have gone up. And that means that you can buy more goods. That means that people who cannot necessarily buy things they need now, holding an asset like Bitcoin will give you that power later. You just have to have delayed gratification and change your mindset. I say that all the time. You can't think, I need this now, I need this tomorrow. If you have that mindset, you're always going to be perpetually in that state of mind. But when you say, yeah, I don't really need to eat out this week, I'm going to save that $50 and buy Bitcoin, or I'm going to save it and put it into cryptocurrency because in the future, that will afford me what I'm thinking. That's how I started. I mean, I don't know why, but people think I started out rich. I was like, no, I just started out taking, you know, delayed gratification, not eating out, not buying unnecessary things. And then your spending power in the future will be much higher.
I know there's a lot of things mentioned that that probably like go over the head if this is your first time kind of hearing about a digital, you know, currency or even just Bitcoin blockchain technology, right? Because there's a difference between a cryptocurrency, even though they all operate on blockchain technology, but not all assets that are on blockchain technology is a cryptocurrency, right?
Yep.
So, but we're talking about Bitcoin right now. And I want to kind of just touch on, just to try to simplify things, because people may ask like, hey, why are you so sure that Bitcoin is going up in value? And so listen, audience, Bitcoin has a limited supply, which is 21 million, right? I think there's a certain date that's coming up. Many of us probably won't be living when the last Bitcoin is minted, but there's more millionaires than there are Bitcoins that would be in existence. So that means there would be millionaires that won't even have a fraction of a piece of a Bitcoin once it is finished. And not only that, I would like to add on top of that is that when you think about the boundaries of our world, we're separated. The US has the dollar, Russia has the ruble, Europe has the euro, and the Chinese have the yuan, and so on and so on and so on. Well, oftentimes we can't invest in things that are in another country, another company that's in another country. Those boundaries tie us apart, right? Well, cryptocurrencies or blockchain technology is one of the only assets being decentralized that the whole world invests into one thing. So the whole world, meaning the billions of people that exist on the world, can only invest into one Bitcoin. That makes the asset, you can't even put words to what that does, right? So when people talk about Bitcoin going to a six-figure asset, that's easy. Bitcoin, let's talk about something a little bit more complicated, right? Bitcoin going to $1 million, that's kind of easy too. It's just
easy too.
Simple math, right? It's simple math. Like it'd be more complicated to say Dogecoin going to $100,000 than Bitcoin going to $1 million, right? That's just simple math. Once you understand the technology and what Izell is talking about with something that is peer-to-peer but trustless, that Byzantine fault problem, you realize then that this here is an asset class, no matter how big the dips you may hear about on the news, the FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, it's an asset class that's just going straight up.
Absolutely. And can I share a chart here? Because I'm glad you mentioned that. Volatility. People watch, you know, the ups and downs of a market. I want to share this with people who are watching. The value of Bitcoin from its inception to now is up over 8 million percent, right? So like you just said, it was harder to go from zero to 40,000 where we are. That was the hard part. Going to a million is just a 25X. That's child's play in Bitcoin terms. I personally think one Bitcoin will be worth 100 million at some point based on the bond market, gold market, silver market. Everything will capitulate at some point into Bitcoin. And right now we already have negative yield bonds. Who wants to hold that? But if you look at this chart, this is where we started, and the number of profitable days, 97.3. This is a layup investment. 97.3% of the time, Bitcoin has been profit. No matter when you bought it, pretty much, you're pretty much in profit. And there's another statistic that anybody that buys Bitcoin and holds for at least 3.5 years is in profit. And the reason why is Bitcoin is programmable money. It's programmed to succeed because as more people come into the market, which more will, you already see billionaires coming in and businesses. It's still a scarce supply. It doesn't increase the amount of Bitcoin. It's still a scarce supply that's on a on a curve. So that value is going to continually increase. It's programmed into the money. It's just that these dips in between scare out newbie investors. I mean, I know people that were calling me after this last dip, and I was like, you just started 2 months ago. What are you scared about? You haven't even helped. You know, you don't understand. So you have to think to yourself that this is something that you should be thinking about passing to your grandkids. I in no way intend to spend any of my Bitcoin right now, simply because we have a lot of stuff in place. But if you're talking about, like you said, the ability for Bitcoin to go up constantly, that's why. And we have the data all to support that. That's why I'm so confident. And some people are like, yeah, why, where do you get this confidence? Because it's math. I don't get confident from people's rhetoric. I like data, statistics. That's why my book is written the way it is. I'm not necessarily a writer, but I understand when you get to the point and there's data behind it, it's not much to argue. We can stop talking and just start. So that's what I want people to understand about this market. It's constantly going up because it's programmed that way.
That's awesome. And listen, y'all, I know we're talking about Bitcoin, but there are so many more digital assets out there.
Yes.
You know, that you can look into. In fact, I think you mentioned in your book, Ethereum, right? And Ethereum is just another blockchain, but because you mentioned smart contracts, and I want people to know. Mm-hmm. So the difference, what the difference is between Bitcoin and Ethereum is just by having that smart contract feature. Can you just speak briefly on that so people could grab that portion?
Oh yeah. So Ethereum is essentially going to put lawyers out of work because smart contracts being able to be executed based on a set of rules that are set before, the lawyers that basically siphon off a lot of the money that people have in order to execute a contract, either through housing, either through criminal law, whatever, Ethereum can do that with a simple smart contract. And because it's very early and Ethereum is going through a change right now, a lot of people don't see it, but you have to understand they have Bitcoin and Ethereum have two separate goals. Bitcoin's trying to be the global reserve asset of the world. But Ethereum is trying to be the smart contract platform of the future, meaning that no matter what you interact with, there's a smart contract software that can execute without the need for a third party, which makes it cheaper, which makes it faster. And again, trustless. You don't have to depend on such and such at the bank to approve it. So that's really where Ethereum is going. Right now, they have decentralized applications. They have NFTs, non-fungible tokens, which is just a one-of-one digital asset, either with art or music that can be sold. So I do think that Ethereum has a chance to change the way we think about law, the way we think about, again, the contract system, because I used to work for a real estate law firm. After I taught, I was in IT. I worked for a real estate law firm and I saw the steps it took to buy a house. And I was like, Jesus Christ, all these people in between. You got to go to the banker and then go back to the loan officer and then come back here with paperwork. All that's gone with Ethereum and also decentralized finance. We talk about Black people not being able to get loans. With DeFi, you don't need any of that. All you need is the collateral. It doesn't matter what you look like. Doesn't matter your zip code, your mama, your daddy, none of that. Your credit score, nothing. You just need the collateral. And that's what it should be. If you have the collateral, you get the loan. And that's what Ethereum is trying to solve.
So just once again, I'm just here to try to, because look, Isaiah is throwing these things out like darts, right? The simplify. So when he mentioned the acronym DeFi, it is like what he said, decentralized finance. In other words, when he's talking about blockchain and Bitcoin, we're literally talking about an asset class that's decentralized. In other words, there's not a central authority that's over it. Like right now we have a ledger system for our world, which is the bank, and the bank like says, hey, you spent so much money at Target. You spent so much money over here. And you could go and calculate like by looking at your bank statement where you spent your money at, right? And now you have a social security number that they could go based upon your payment history, how all that works. Well, in the blockchain world, all of that gets thrown out the window, right? There's no centralized authority. The code, the actual Bitcoin is the decentralized like platform that everyone, so you become your own bank in a way. Yep. There's no more fees. And with decentralized finance, there's no credit check. You just get a loan. It doesn't matter who you are. You could get loaned off your cryptocurrencies, no questions asked. It's just, here's the money, figure out what to do with it. You put your crypto up as assets. So it is a game changing technology and the way of the future. If you as a person or an individual would take the time and not be closed minded, but to be open-minded, growth mindset, and really embrace what's going on around you. It is game-changing. We got a question from the audience.
The question I have is around opportunities for careers in the crypto space. So everyone is not going, obviously we have our side hustle our side hustle and our understanding that we'll have for personal investments in crypto. The question that I have is more so for careers in that space, right? Everyone's not going to be a technologist. What do you see as the opportunities to for a career for a non-technologist kind of going forward?
So what exactly are you thinking about? Because I can whittle it down to your current sector.
To the particular thing. Mm-hmm. Yes, I happen to work in product management, but I'm just asking for the broader group. Like I had a conversation with my niece get ready to graduate in another year, that type of thing. General question.
Okay, so first thing, accountant. There's not many crypto accountants. Trust me, somebody who's been in crypto, there's not many. That's literally a wide open field. You could take it over. Matter of fact, if you're an accountant, you won't have a job in 5 years if you can't do crypto taxes. So that's one. The second thing is project managers for these companies, because they're great technologists, but getting from there to product for a lot of them is a struggle. A lot of smart people, but not really good at getting the product out, because you can have cryptocurrencies speculate all day, but where's the product? So project managers are good. I would say front-end design. You don't have to be a technologist, but artists that can create actual good user experience, user interface, because again, there's a lot of smart people in this space, but it's a lot of ugly apps. And Dimitri knows what I'm talking about. A lot of these applications are terrible looking. If you saw Coinbase, when it first came out, it was one of the ugliest websites I've ever seen. But that's the thing. That's one of them. Another one is also the ability to do business administration for these companies. Because again, smart people, tech world, not really apt at running a business. So that's other ways. Anything that you can do in the regular world right now, you can apply it to Bitcoin and blockchain. If you are in the banking industry, again, take your skills that you learned in the traditional finance system and take it to the crypto world. I promise you, those skills are much better used in a system that's being built than a system that's already established, that's crumbling as we speak. So those are a few different ways to get into without being a coder or a technologist. And even if you're educated like myself, having a book, having a podcast, having your own show, doing webinars like this with people, these are all ways that you can get involved in the market. And just find your niche, something you're good at. And that is definitely how you can win in this market.
So our next question is from Jasmine. I'm going to unmute you. You asked you to unmute and you can ask your question if you want to.
Hey, this is actually her husband. I chimed in. I wanted to ask, in the DeFi space, you spoke of the collateral. So what type of collateral are they looking for? Like other digital wallets or just like tangible collateral, like houses and things like that?
Oh, yeah. So what we mean by collateral is that you can use Bitcoin, Ethereum. You can use other cryptocurrencies as collateral for a cash loan. So there's services such as BlockFi right now. You can have 50,000 worth of Bitcoin and put it up as collateral, get a $25,000 cash loan, and you can use that as you please. Now, if you're a business, you can get the same loan and the interest that you have to pay back can be written off on your taxes. And you never have to sell your Bitcoin. That's the best part. You give it as collateral, you pay it back in cash, they give you back your Bitcoin. So you never have to sell it, essentially. Celsius Network is another one. Nexo is another platform that does that. Decentralized finance is amazing. And I'll let Dimitri jump in here too if there's other platforms you can use.
No, go ahead. You got it. Your flow.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And I would say that this is a better way of lending, a better way of moving money, simply because, again, we don't have the barriers to entry that Black people once had. If you have the collateral, you get the money. That's it. There's no questions asked. It's not a whole big deal about, you know, where's the money going? You have the collateral, here's the money. And that's how it should work. That's how peer-to-peer lending should work.
And we actually have a billionaire that's taking it to a whole nother level named Michael Saylor. This is what he's doing. Listen, now process this. He's getting loans on his Bitcoin. So picture owning some Bitcoin, not even a whole one, a percent of one. He would get a loan on the Bitcoin. It's not that you lose your Bitcoin. The money that he gets a loan with, he goes and rebuys Bitcoin with it.
Yep.
Game changing philosophy, right? And then off as it increases in value, he takes that, pays down the loan, and he gets another loan on the new Bitcoin that he just purchased.
And it keeps going. And so he just keeps stacking and stacking Bitcoin off of loans, but never giving it up.
Mm-hmm.
Game change. I think he owns a lot of Bitcoin. Let's just say.
Oh, yeah. And I want to say for a regular person, a regular everyday person, if you're not a billionaire, that strategy works if your loan time is more than 4 years. So if you got 5 years to pay it back, remember the statistic I gave you. Anybody that's bought Bitcoin is up in profit after 3.5 years, and not just up, at least 1,800%. So literally, that is a strategy. I'm working with real estate people now because I'm telling them, like, yeah, you can put a Bitcoin for a loan, use the cash, buy a house, pay back the loan with the cash flow in 2 or 3 years, and the Bitcoin that you had will probably be increased in value by the time you get it back.
Yeah, my question was for Zay. I was wondering, with layer two solutions on Bitcoin, how long do you think layer two solutions would take? And do you see that, like, basically stopping the need for things like Ethereum and other coins?
So layer two is already here. Lightning Network is pretty established. Strike app, you can use it. Blue Wallet, the IO, you can establish it. If you go to Get Umbrel, Getumbrel, you can actually establish a Lightning node. People will pay to use your channels. Do I think it will make all cryptocurrencies obsolete? No. Do I think it will get rid of the cryptocurrencies whose only claim to fame is that it's faster? Yes. Because there's a lot of cryptos that come out and say, well, we're faster than Bitcoin. Well, who cares? Nobody's using it. Your blockchain is empty. The way we always describe it on the show is that, hey, would you rather be in traffic in LA or would you have an open highway in Idaho? That's the difference in blockchain. So the faster coins will probably be obsolete. Also, the coins that say they have a lower fees, they'll probably be obsolete, but not all. There's plenty of cryptos that will survive, and layer two will give people the opportunity to transact at more of a private level. So there are some privacy coins that may be a little shaky because once you go into layer two, there is no tracking of the blockchain like there is at layer one.
So, and once again, let me try to simplify this, y'all. So for those who don't know about layer two, picture Bitcoin as this road right here, right? Well, because like Tesla wanted to build an underground thing, but picture a platform going on top, right? So everything mm-hmm. just transacts and happens here. All the action happens up here and it gets settled like, oh, this is what happened up here. And that record is stored on Bitcoin, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we mean when we say layer two. And there is a blockchain out there that's actually striving to add smart contract features to Bitcoin called Stacks. And Stacks is striving to take Bitcoin to a whole nother level to challenge Google and Apple to store decentralized applications, acronym as DApps, on it based on the Bitcoin platform. And so,
oh yeah, and another one is RGB. RGB is doing that as well. Yep. So, and I just talked to a developer. He's building NFTs on the Lightning Network. So it's coming. It's all coming. You just got to wait. Technology is it always comes.
Good question.
So one of the goals of Entrepreneurial Appetite is to build community. And we've had a number of authors and entrepreneurs come and talk. We had a really good brother named Calvin Williams Jr. come speak, and he has a company called Freeman Capital. So it strives to make financial planning more accessible. And so one thing I noticed when I was doing my research on him is that, you know, there's all these Black like fintech people, right? Or there's all these Black VCs getting started and whatnot. And in these sort of like really niche communities, there are Black communities within these niche communities. And so as a Bitcoin person, a crypto person, an Afrofuturist of finance, can you tell us a little bit about the Black community that you have around you, the support system that you have around you in your field and what you strive to do?
Oh yeah. So I will say it was real lonely at first, walking this road alone. It was hard finding people, Black people in the industry. But now we have established, like I said before, Black Bitcoin Billionaires. We have over 100,000 followers on there on Clubhouse. That is one community that is huge. We'll actually be in Miami at the Bitcoin conference. The first conference where there'll be hundreds of Black people at a Bitcoin conference. I used to go to conferences. I was the only Black person a lot of times. I used to always say it was like a fly in milk. I was the only Black person there. I stuck out like a sore thumb. You could tell. But now those communities have started. So Black Bitcoin Billionaires is one. My daily show, The Gentleman of Crypto, We have, I forget how many subscribers, over 10,000 at some point. That community, we definitely stick together. We share ideas. We give each other tips. That community is large as well. And I will say that in the city of LA, where I've lived for the last 5 years, a lot of the small groups that meet at meetups are mostly Black. That's one thing that was great to me was that, man, it's not even a Black meetup. It's just a Bitcoin meetup. And then boom, it's like 90% Black because Coinbase did a survey. 75% of Black people are interested in crypto, but 33% of them have no clue how what it does or how it works. So we have a perfect storm of people who want the information, but don't have it. So they go out to every event, everything they can find. And that those communities, I think, are growing by the day.
As you mentioned that the camp this summer in Charlotte, yes. How can we keep, can we get our children and maybe ourselves connected to folks who are teaching about blockchain technology and Bitcoin? And this is for both you and Dimitrik.
Oh yeah. So for the camp, I want to invite you out, Dimitrik, if you want to come teach, cause I will have guest speakers there, but I'll show this real quick. The camp is Innovative Learning, virtual Bitcoin summer camp. We're actually raising money in Bitcoin. We partner with BitGive. This is the camp that we'll be doing. And our overview basically is to teach children between the ages of, or between the grades of 6 through 10 about Bitcoin, about smart contracts, NFTs, how they can benefit. We also have different games available, like there's Bitcoin Monopoly that just came out, literally just came out yesterday, and we'll have that game there. There's games for mining. All of those things will be available for kids at the Bitcoin Summer Camp. I'm sorry, and sign up starts in June, so I'll have to give that information when it comes out, but it will be on the website at Innovative Learning, and I'll put that out. I'll give that to you guys as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome. Look forward to hearing more about it. Can you ask the question one more time, please?
So yeah, Dimitrik, I was asking you all to tell us a little bit about how we can get connected to learning communities. So for you, can you tell us about the learning community that you established and what you all try to do, and give us a little bit more insights into how people can get connected with you?
Yeah, so my goal is really to help families and people thrive, right? So what I strive to do as a coach is to take people by the hand and teach them from square one, like I wish someone would have did for me. I wrote the whole, Isaiah was talking about the 3, 4-year, 5 cycle plan, because you realize that Bitcoin goes on a cycle. Most of these cryptocurrencies in the market operates on a cycle. And if you give it 5 years, it's always going to be higher than where it was. That's pretty. So with that stated, in the past, we did really well. My wife, when I started investing, and I saw all that money would go straight down because I didn't understand the cycles. I didn't have no one to take me by the hand to explain to me what was going on. I thought it was going to continually keep going up. And listen, if someone was there to take me by the hand back about 4 or 5 years ago, we could have brought close to 50 Bitcoin back then, because that's how high money, that's how low Bitcoin went, and that's how much money we were up. We could have bought 50 Bitcoin, and I learned, and now I teach what I learned I think we have one of our members on right now, Crypto Carmen. Shout out to Crypto Carmen that's on right now.
Shout out.
But so that's pretty much what I do here in San Antonio. I strive to take ones and to help them not experience the same lessons learned to where they could benefit. And if they want to trade, I teach trading strategies. And from there, I teach them what platforms, how to operate these platforms, how to get involved, how to research smart cities, utilize Twitter and other platforms to learn about blockchain technology, because it is another world. So, for example, let me close out with this, Langston, because I think this is important. I sent this to you earlier on today. I asked our learning community about, hey, I remember investing in the CDs, right? And there's like, yeah, how much interest you used to get? 2 to 5% interest. Langston, I sent you a screenshot today about the interest that we're getting by putting money into DeFi. What was that number that you saw?
Man, you're gonna put me on the spot, man. I gotta get my get myself rolled out and check what you gave me. So the number here is 203%.
203% interest. Mm-hmm. On the money that we have sitting in a decentralized token. this is a whole nother world. You talking mm-hmm. about getting 3-5%? Like that is like, yeah.
That's when you realize banks are robbing you. When you start seeing, I mean, literally, you could stake a stable coin and make 8%.
Yeah, easy.
That's 4 times as much as most banks. I mean, savings accounts. We don't even talk about it. It's like 0.75%, but yeah, 8-10% easy with stable coins. And that's not even a speculative token.
Listen.
So
go ahead, brother. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, banks are, in my mind, banks are already obsolete. They're just scrambling to figure out how to take advantage of the market, because if you can have a stable coin 1-to-1, just like your dollar digitally, earn 8% on that, then you can buy cryptocurrency with that, earn the type of interest you're talking about, 200%, 300%, whatever. I don't see a reason to use a bank. Yeah. I mean, outside of getting, you know, your paycheck, at that point, you should just be funneling it straight to the system.
Listen, and that's what I'm striving to teach ones, how to transition their whole financial gameplay, but on blockchain, and how you could, because listen, there are Visa cards that you all could use from crypto.com that you get money back. Like he was saying earlier, you get money back in crypto, you know, 3% and so on. But I'm going to finish with that because I could talk a lot about this, just like I'm passionate about the subject. And because this is a new world, and we invite more people to come over and get involved.
Thank you for joining this episode of Entrepreneurial Appetite's Black Book Discussions. You can find more information about the Blockchain Coaching Group and where to purchase Bitcoin in Black America in the show notes. The show notes will also include information where you can support Slim Pickens. Don't forget about the 10% discount code EA Book Club at slimpickensoutfitters.com. That's EA Book Club at slimpickensoutfitters.com. The next episode of Entrepreneurial Appetite's Black Book Discussions will feature a conversation with Pastor DeForest Buster Stories, author of Say Yes to No Debt and founder of the D-Free Financial Movement.